Greetings, parish orphans and retrogrades. Happy Friday. Today, on a Friday, we are doing a In Not Of show, a podcast within a podcast. And by we, I mean my good friend Anthony Boss and me. What's up, Boss? How are you?
How's it going, Tim? Good to see you again.
You too, man. Yep. So we were, last time we got together, IRL, as they say, we were discussing all things patriarchy. And that was right before I saw you for Halloween with our families. Our families have developed the tradition of trick-or-treating together here in South Mississippi. And we had a good late night convo over my kitchen table, partly about the case for patriarchy. You were asking me how it's selling. And the next day, of course, I was rolling out the day after Halloween for Franciscan University. And I went and gave a talk there. It was a packed talk, very, very positive response. I sold tons of books, but it's interesting because it's not the traddiest audience. I was expecting a traddier audience. Anyway, so we were talking about my book, not that that's what we usually do when we get together. And we were talking about why the patriarchy is so misunderstood. Right? We were drinking. So it's probably good that we can give a I don't want to say sanitized because it wasn't dirty, but a more glossy version of that conversation here. But I thought that that's what we ought to try to do. How to spot a real patriarch. What a true patriarch really looks like. It's not a LARP thing. It's not live action role play, right? That's the gist of what we're trying to reproduce today for people.
Yeah. It does seem like it can be looked at as like LARPy in a way, right? Like a true patriarch, but really it's required. It's necessary. And it's what we're missing right now, I think.
Yeah, it seems to be like this. This seems to be the state of affairs. I think this is why we always have to answer this. Well, first off, I'll name three of the questions that always come up. And at least two of them came up in the Q&A at my talk a couple days after we saw each other IRL last. But LARPing, live action role playing, tends to be kind of an internet fringe group. Doesn't really matter what the topic is, an internet fringe group that makes some sort of golden calf in a fake way that's non-practical out of the reclamation of some aspect of Western civilization, right? And you and I are kind of famous because we're on the extreme Catholic right, both of us, and yet neither of us would ever be accused, even by our detractors, as LARPing, right? We're always calling our kind of fellow travelers on the Catholic right in good humor. We're saying, look, you're LARPing, man. You're making a cartoon version out of this thing that ought to be realistic. And so it breaks down where the only two groups of people that receive a book like this, and I would know because I'm now plugging it, doing interviews around the country, doing talks around the country, tend to be the normies, either normies right or left, for whom the thesis of the book is kind of shocking or new, even normies on the right. That's one group. They're actually closer to the normies on the left that are feminists because they've been secretly feminized, even the normies on the right. That's one group. Or then the internet kind of edgelords who you and I are kind of friends with by virtue of being far right-wing Catholics, but who have this ankle-biting rapport with at least, my account, sometimes with yours. And they tend to say like, oh yeah, like if you're a real patriarch, then you've never lifted a finger around the home. My book describes in quite gratifying detail what it looks like. Men ought to be in charge around the home. I'm trying to restore the household patriarchy, the lay patriarchy, the majority jurisdiction vocation. Most men aren't priests. They're priests of the home. But these edgelords tend to, and I don't even think any of these edgelords have this around the house, or if they do, it sounds hellish. They tend to, make up rules, your wife should never use a paper plate or something when she's cooking the family dinner or something stupid like this. You've never, like in 40-year-old virgin where it's like, you've never actually seen this, have you? right? Like that you don't have this at home.
You've never actually. Yeah. No, right? You're 100% right, man. You're 100% right. I mean, I've actually heard that exact phrase used. Is that, are you kidding me? Paper plates? Like, no, I treat my husband and my family well, and we eat off of the finest of china when we're having, you know, chicken nuggets. And that would be the other thing too, right? It's like no meal can ever be less than fully home cooked, with, you know, the chicken from out back that you just plucked the feathers and you've made the bread fresh from, you know, everything fresh, that sort of stuff too. There's some absurd things where you see men kind of talking like that. And that is truly just completely LARPing. Absolutely.
Right. I mean, you probably never heard a woman say that, right? I don't really want to start this out on the wrong foot, which is to respond to the first of three questions that I often get. But we're starting out on that tip. Usually I start out kind of on the offensive. The patriarchy is good. I sound like the edgelord. Today we're starting off responding to the fake people that clearly aren't running what they're claiming to be running at home because it's so impractical. The patriarchy, in addition to the fact that it's Christ instituted and nature, God's nature instituted, that men run the household, they're the priest, prophet, king, it's the good for them, their wives, and their kids, and it's the best way that in this vocation, the lay vocation, people get to heaven. But I'm starting out kind of on the opposite tip, responding to this question that I did get at Franciscan, and it goes like this. Like, you know, how do you prevent a household patriarchy from turning into an abusive, tyrannical, wife-beating situation? And my first response is always to scratch my head and to say, why, when I describe the well-ordered version of what should be common and ubiquitous, do you leap to the uncommon, not at all ubiquitous, perversion, disordered version of that thing? You know, and it's usually a young woman that asks, like, well, I mean, I just described a well-ordered monarchy of the home, which is a very happy setting, the superlative happy setting at home. And, you know, usually center-left kind of normies are like, well, aren't they all, you know, these abusive tyrannies rather than monarchies? And I'm like, no, why would you even think that? But then some of the other edgelords on the right, who clearly aren't living this way, right? People see the way Steph and I regard one another, like, wow, you guys are living it out. I see the way you and your wife, I always want a username. You haven't used it yet, though. You and your wife act. You're living it out. But, you know, cut corners where you can. Paper plates are great. Your wife is great. My wife is great. So it's like we're not some middle between the edgelords and the normies. I think we're the true opposite of the normies, who are living out some, you know, hellish feminist dream or instantiation of a dream, and the edgelords are just guys that are cartoonishly dreaming up what it would be like if they went home to a patriarchal situation. I don't think they are. The truly patriarchal situation is nice, right? It involves women being very nice to their husbands and husbands being very nice to their wives, or something like that.
Yeah, it's very strange because there's, I like to throw out the letters, the alphabet stuff, right? Like SSPX, FSSP, even there you see situations where it's not patriarchal the way it should be. It's like a kind of a fake being in charge. You'll notice, you'll catch things where like the wife is actually running things, you know, she's really the one making decisions and doing stuff. And it's very disordered and strange. It's always awkward, especially during dinners or different events when you see the women just being in charge of everything. And I see it all the time with FSSP families, with normie, right? We say normies or whatever, the people that go to the Novus Ordo masses and things, because sometimes they've just never been exposed to it. Although I have seen them do it a lot of times better than some of these more traditional type groups. But I don't want to forget to your point, though, that it's strange that people automatically want to go to something where it's like the natural order perverse, right? Where like there's this situation where the man is going to be like abusive or taking over control and just acting like you said, like a total edgelord or just a clown, basically, right? Because that's not what it's about at all. I mean, it's like you said, the wife is just very genuine and actual helper to the husband, and it makes a large difference in the family, just the way that it runs. And it's necessary that we have to treat our wives the right way. So yeah, it is interesting that question came up, is like, does it immediately go to this abusive situation, or it looks strange? I don't know why people would think that that's the normal order. That can happen, right? That it can be perverted. And I've seen that before, where it gets distorted and it's wrong. But that's just, again, it's like this edgelord thing. I wouldn't hope it's like that for most people when they try to learn this role and this correct order of things.
Yeah. Something funny and important that you just mentioned, that, you know, you thought you weren't answering the question there. I think it's like, I remember the girl where she was sitting at Franciscan when she asked me this. Oh, how do you prevent it from turning into a tyranny? It's like, well, there is no extrinsic block, right? It's literally, it is a kind of monarchy. And if you marry a good kingly man like Aragorn, what prevents Aragorn in Lord of the Rings from taking the ring for himself and slaughtering Frodo and the hobbits and clubbing them and eating their bone? It's like, well, nothing, just the goodness of the leader. You know? But here's why you were answering the question, the first part of your answer, and then you connected to the second part. Question asked, question answered. The feminist matriarchy has preponderated to such an extent, Anthony, that it's like, dude, people can't even conceive. I'm talking left, right, center. People can't even conceive of what the patriarchy, which is natural and God instituted and nature instituted, looks like. As perverse as that is, that's how much like Satan has triumphed. Women run households, and that's how most of us grew up. And it's perverse and shrill, and there's a lot of shrieking. There's not bona fide control because no one's really, you know, obeying the mom out of love or really even fear, just more out of convenience. Well, women run households always become tyrannical. And I remark about this in the opening section of my book. So all they can conceive of, because they've been so brainwashed by feminism, is the way that the feminists portray a patriarchy, which is like a man beating everyone for no reason even. You know, they just conceive of men going around, husbands and fathers going around beating.
Right. Yeah, that's part of the funnest thing, is just going around the house and just being super demanding and just for no reason, just five across the eyes, right? Just keep them guessing, just for no reason. Just every time you walk by, you want them flinching, you want them scared of you. Like, that doesn't even make sense, right? It's ridiculous to think of it that way. But
it's a horrible model of leadership.
I guess people would want to view it like that. But, you know, I can understand how if men or women are used to seeing the women running the houses, then they maybe assume like, oh, it's just going to be this way, but the opposite. It's just the man's going to overcorrect and it's going to be crazy. But I mean, it creates harmony. It's not natural to be that way. And it's just not something that would normally happen unless the person's just an actual like clown. I mean, you're just a terrible, terrible leader. I mean, and that, I guess there is potential for that, I suppose. But yeah, it's crazy. It's not going to go to that level. It's never really going to be like that, at least from what I've seen. And as far as the women running the house, that's what really gets sad, because you see everything goes into chaos. The men turn into these like squeaky little gerbils, just kind of going around their house, you know, not trying to offend their wife or say something wrong. And the children see this, and now the children are like scared of the wife. And I've seen men who like speak up and their wife will like shoot them a look, right? And you see them like shrink down into themselves. And it's just
we've all seen that.
It's really a creepy feeling.
Yeah. Now, I wasn't trying to cut you off. We have literally... Every one of us has seen that look. It's creepy.
Yeah, it's so strange. I don't know why that becomes a thing. And when it does, like I said, it ruins everything. It ruins dinners. It ruins parties. It ruins just trying to have a visit. I mean, you go to, you'll see it at other places. It ruins the whole family. Ruins everything. So, yeah, it's definitely important that women don't act that way, because that feminism is so ingrained in them. It's so difficult for them to get out, you know, sometimes. And they don't even notice it. We're just like used to it now. And so it's definitely a problem.
Yeah, it's ruined families, and therefore it's ruined society, because the household is the single cell society. But people will say this to me. They're like, look, you know, you give these talks on feminism, you're always talking about the women, talk about the men. I guess that's what we're doing today, is talking about what it looks like, the symptomology of a working, happy patriarchy, when the man is not LARPing. He just legitimately has secure control over his family. He is the unquestionable leader, but he's the well-ordered leader, which is what nine times out of 10, someone that's trained to grow up to be a household patriarch, a father and husband, will be, or 19 times out of 20, unless he lets Satan take over that way. Instead, I will just say one more word on what the matriarchy looks like, smells like. It's stinky, right? Like Satan has preponderated by taking over the family. And women out there, if you feel secure in your control over the, you get the, you know, it's not good for your family. All the women that are like, I used to be a feminist. I came off of it. I knew it wasn't right the whole time I did it. Like Michael Scott said, I knew that wasn't right the second it came out of my mouth. You know, like about Toby. Hilarious episode. Like that, but they might be like, well, but I'm enjoying the commandeering of the power too much. Let me just tell you something. All of these men that run around mousishly squeaking around the house, they always, and me and you have talked a lot about this, boss, they're always bad-mouthing their wives behind the scene. It's ignoble. It's dishonorable. It's really objectionable and stomach-turning, but it always runs concomitant with men who are cowing to their wives, doesn't it? They're always wanting to bow. I'm like, dude, I don't talk badly about my wife. I mean, she hardly ever makes me mad. I hardly ever make her mad. But when we do, we work it out and it's done because we love and respect each other. And so do you and D.
Tiptoeing around sweet D. sweet D. No. Yes. So, I mean, you're right though, right? I mean, men that talk bad about their wives is probably one of the worst examples of a good patriarch, right? You should never badmouth your wife, privately, publicly, whatever you want to say, right? There's things like maybe asking advice for certain things from friends or whatever, but difficult situations, but you should never badmouth your spouse. I mean, that's the person that you chose to share your life with and to raise your family and things. So when you see men doing that, that's the first step. Stop doing that. Don't talk bad about your wife or your kids to people. It's disgusting. And it's completely, completely unmanly to sit and complain and discuss like who's supposed to be this sacred bond that you have with this person, right? Get like this, the sacrament of matrimony with, and then you're just going to sit and walk around trashing them all day. You got to stop doing that. That's the first thing. And I know a lot of people get concerned.
Sorry. I was just going to say, it's the first symptom that this is not a patriarch you're dealing with. This is a cuck. Patriarchs do not do that. It's plain and simple. Sorry.
Yeah, 100%. No, 100%. They should not be doing that. So if these are things like maybe you see in friends or maybe you've done, hey, look, it's never too late, right? Stop. Don't do that kind of stuff. You want to be a good patriarch? That's like you said, like step one, like that's one of the symptoms of a bad one. There's no other way to handle it. You can't be trashy to your spouse. That's just completely cucked. I can't stand it. I really can't stand it.
No, and they'll try to draw you into it. It's like, look, I don't want to hear this. I don't want to partake in it. Don't say bad things about your spouse. One, it's what Nietzsche calls ressentiment. It means your power was commandeered and you're feeling weak and you're looking to feel strong in another way. So you're lashing out and it's disgusting. It's vile. Number two, I mean, which reflects, I guess, the second part of that is it's what is called a blocked wish. Go home, take the power back, say, look, I'm not going to talk about you badly anymore. Apologize to your wife. Say, look, I'm the patriarch. I need to have control of things here and I'm going to, but things are going to improve for both of us and I will never badmouth you again. But the broader point that you're mentioning here that's strange is commonality with divorcees. They always are talking about the person they're divorced from. You're like, dude, you don't know what a bad look this is, what horrible optics it is. If you're divorced, that is the number one failure, the fundamental contradiction of your path to heaven. However bad your spouse is, it's a loss. Take that L. Like it's, I mean, don't take the L. Go and undivorce them. Get back together. It's, you know, if you're married and you badmouth your divorced ex, so-called ex-spouse, you both look like losers. De facto, you both are. Undo it, and you can become winners. Same thing with a guy that's so non-patriarchal, so disempowered, and so cuckolded around the home place where he's supposed to reign. that he would say a word against his, what ought to be his greatest helper, his best friend, the closest friendship imaginable. Aristotle calls it a friendship between unequals, can be this close though. A guy and his handmaiden, his wife. You can't come away from talking about your spouse or ex-spouse for divorcees and look good. You're just not. The only way you can ever talk about your spouse and seem cool to a room full of guys who aren't morons or LARPers or edgelords is to just be like, my wife's amazing. My wife's an amazing person. She's my best friend. Like, I would favor her to all of you in a heartbeat, even if they're good friends. And they're not good friends if they're going to listen to you talk to her about her like that.
Well, the problem too is that I've seen that, you know, in day-to-day life, just I'm around secular people most of my day. And it's so common to just hear complaining and whining. And when you start to tell people, I'll just confront them and be like, this is disgusting. I don't want to hear you talk bad about your wife. I don't want to hear you talk about how you've got, you know, three ex-wives or whatever it is. I don't want to know any of that, right? The only time I want to hear about your wife is if you're saying something nice about her, you know? And sometimes it's even best if you can't, then obviously, like, what is it like? So stupid. What is it, like Thumper from Bambi? Is like, if you can't say something nice, just don't say it at all. Thumper's, I mean, just mother. Start from that, yeah, premise. Yes, even it's kind of, I mean, we're teaching life lessons. Oh, is it? Sorry.
That comes from Thumper's mother.
The best part of that film is in the first 30 seconds when the hunter takes out Bambi's mom. The whole rest of that film is trash. No, but I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous though. I can't describe it. So I'll just actively say that to people, like at work or wherever I'm at, like, stop, just stop. It's disgusting. I don't want to hear it. You don't sound like a man. You sound like a, you know, a whining, sniveling, just loser. You know, right? Yeah. I mean, take control of the situation or whatever it is, but don't come at me with that stuff. I don't want to know about it. Keep it to yourself. If you're having problems, then as a man, you need to figure that out, because you don't need to walk around trashing your wife. That's just ridiculous. And so I do. I confront it head on. People need to start doing that too. We got to take things back slowly, and that's one way to do it, is just to stop conversations like that. Just get away with it. It's ridiculous.
Just for the record, Bambi's mother is assassinated roughly 45 minutes into the film. So
see, I don't even know this movie. I thought it was like right at the very beginning. Like, that would be the best part of the film.
The best part of the film, according to you, is 45 minutes in. And it's that is
I know nothing about it.
Yeah, the mother dies. What kind of patriarchal oppression of females is that, Disney?
The deep take is that the father arranged that because he wanted to be free to marry, and he knew that he couldn't divorce his wife. And so
get up, Bambi. Yeah. I mean, that would be quite some feat, because he's a deer and the hunter is a man. But look, here's the thing. I like, unlike a lot of these LARPers online, you and I hang out with our families, with our wives. It's not you and I, it's not like we hang out in real life and we're always away from our family. We're always together. The four of us, you, your wife, sweet D, me and my wife, Steph. We're four chums, and it's a good time, and we hang out. And the thing is, I know that what you say about your wife is sincere, because I see the affection you guys have for each other. I see, honestly, I'm sorry to say this, people, but you, along with one of my younger friends, pairs of friends, a young couple, an ex-student actually, and his young wife, they're two of our just very favorite couples to hang out with, because there is no awkward matriarchy, shrill, shrieking feminist moment. There are none of those. And therefore there's none of the resentful male complaining on the side. All there is love. You guys also happen to have extremely cool wives, which is half the equation, obviously. But also, you and the male part of the other couple I'm talking about are not insecure about helping the helper.
Duchess.
Yeah. You call them the Duke and the Duchess. You're mutual friends with them through hanging out at my place. So the Duke, yourself, myself, people like you hang out with John Wayne. you help the helper. Now, feminists, and I did just give this talk at Franciscan, so I know what how the FAQs go at these stump speeches. They're always wanting an extrinsic, like, proof, a guarantee that the good leader will be a good, like a constitutional amendment, like a guarantee on paper. Mm-hmm. They're like, well, so do you help your wife with the dishes every day? I'm like, no. Not, okay, look, man, the dishes are my least favorite chore. And I do not do the dishes around the household. It's just, it's my least favorite chore. But what I do is, man, particularly when things are hard for Steph, or even just because I love her, she's such an amazing helper. Half the time, if she's up finishing a video, which she does all the tech stuff up here, I'll do surprise, like I'll just have one or two of the kids bathe so that it's just like, oh, cool. That's her job, right? But a lot of nights I do it and there is no expectation. She has never been like, why isn't the kid bathed? A lot of times we had friends over or whatever. I'll just straight up, I hate doing the kitchen. It is very rare that I'll kick in help with the kitchen, but I'll just, hey, look at this sparkling bathroom. I just cleaned this bathroom. I love vacuum. Stuff like that around the house, it's not expected. And there's no shrill, you will never hear, even if you're a fly on the wall around my house, you'll never hear a shrill like female demand about that. But it just gets done, right? Because I enjoy helping the helper because Steph is my best friend, my helper. And it happens. I think this is what you and I were talking about on Halloween night, you know, having a few beers in us. It's like, dude, it's a working, excellently efficient, loving system. The helper helps you and you're appreciative. You clearly have a very good wife. And so do I. And it's like, dude, it just makes me want to help. Now, it doesn't mean I'm going to help in my least favorite way. Kitchen's the worst. But something about the pots and the pans. But I help in as many creative ways as I can in ways that won't drive me out of my skull.
Well, it's natural. That's the thing that surprises me is that it's so surprising to other people. It's like, okay, you throw common sense out the window when you're the man of the house. Right. You want to do things for people that you love. I work to support my family. I don't love to do it necessarily in that case, but I learned that virtue, right, by taking care of my family. I want to do things for my wife because I love her. So yeah, if she's struggling, she's having a rough day, or if I just want to be a nice guy, I love her. I'm going to help her out sometimes, right? I'll maybe, like you said, throw a couple of kids in the bath or do something else while she's busy, because then I can have extra time with her not doing her doing her housework around the house. And now we have time to do stuff together, right? Right. It's natural. And I don't see why that surprises people. I do that out of the goodness of my heart. There's never an expectation, like you said. There never should be, right? But from the love and the care that you have for this person, you obviously want to spend time with them and maximize the time and the things you can do and be helpful. And so yeah, it's totally normal to like go help out and do something out of the goodness of your heart. That's like saying, you know, you'd be watching your wife struggling and just be like standing around like, if you would just listen to me and do it the correct way, it's ridiculous. You jump in, you help out, and you do those things. You help the helper, like you're saying. And so, of course, that's natural. And for people to think that it's not is strange to me. Why would that not be the norm?
Yeah, it's cartoonish. It's the cartoonish sort of picture thinking instantiated of people that have lived all of their lives under some sort of feminist matriarchy, which is most of us, which is pretty much all of society. Some people just can't fathom it and they can't fathom what it would look like. And so they ask these questions, like you said, why the surprise? Why do you always ask about beating? This is not a big problem, you know, in suburban society, you know, in the 21st century in first world countries. This is not something that ought to leap into the imagination. First off, you keep saying it's natural, but I can answer those questions. I know why they're so surprised, because me, you, a small handful of my other friends, and most of my friends are Catholics, pretty good Catholics, but most of them still don't, they haven't made it over this ridge. They haven't. Most of my friends, even the good Catholic ones, you see, like, they're really struggling with this fundamental canker on the heart of society and on the heart of the family, feminism, and they're not understanding how to overcome this ridge, to take high ground by nightfall. I mentioned the Duke and one or two of my other buddies, you know, my brother Dave has a very good healthy marital situation. And people are like, well, you're impugning everyone. Well, look, that's the argument in case for patriarchy. It's like, this is not a traditional versus normie Novus Ordo thing. This is not a left versus right Catholic thing. It ain't even a Catholic versus Protestant or secular thing. It's feminism preponderated by taking over all of society. It's the first ranking leftism, the closest to the beating heart of what you would call subversive leftism, much more fundamental to leftism than Marxism, any of the socialisms, homosexualism, transgenderism. How do I know? Because it was the original sin. Adam acting like Eve and Eve acting like Adam. It was constitutive of the original sin. I would remind people, this book is still new. It's making the rounds. If you want to support this program, please go on Sophia Press today and purchase it. I believe it's on sale right now. You can also get it on Amazon.com. It's an indirect way to support this show. Another way to support this show is to become a patron supporter. I want to hail all of my loyal patrons. Thank you, guys. Go to Timothy J. Gordon and become a patron today. Great benefits, and they're going to be enhanced in 2022. The new tier that we just added, the $20 tier, is specific to young or you know, youngish single Catholics who are looking to meet good retrogrades and parish orphans. And it's called the St. Luke's Single Society. So if you go on Patreon and you're interested in meeting other people that are already kind of pre-sorted retrograde type Catholics, we had our first meeting last night. We're going to meet at least once a month as a group. We all had an alcoholic beverage and we were all getting to know each other. I kind of just kick things off. And then I think the St. Luke's Single Society met until after I was gone. I heard it going on up here for two or three more hours. So it's a good way to meet people that you already know, agree about most stuff. You guys can work the rest of it out yourselves. It's better than Match.com or Catholic Match. That's the $20 patron tier. Thank you all patrons. Also, I would admonish all of you, if you live in a blue state, get to a red state, do so by contacting realestateforlife.org. So many people are leaving their blue states and need to. I strongly recommend getting here to the red belt, the blood red belt between Texas and Florida. Any state here is better than where you're coming from. If you're coming from Texas, California, Hawaii, Massachusetts, anywhere in the Northeast, really. God bless you guys. So yeah, we're talking, me and Boss, today on this podcast within a podcast, you know, householder stuff, man stuff. What does it look like to have a bona fide patriarchy? This book that I've been plugging for the last months, it's only a month and a half old, is not LARPing. It is a working system. It is, if I can just be honest and address the last thing you said, Boss, it's a sexy system, right? You actually, it's based on attraction. Can you believe that? It's based on attraction. The marital act, let's be Puritans about it. Let's call it the marital act. The act of procreation is something that is inextricably bound up in male to female, female to male attraction. And the problem with so many of these, I'm just going to say it, cuckolded non-patriarchs who are running around not at the charge of their households, is there doesn't even seem to be mutual attraction anymore. Whatever attracted husband to wife and wife to husband has been let go, let slip, let fall idle or fallow in such a way that it's like you don't have, they don't have the natural fuel of like, oh, you know, I'm going to keep it safe, keep it friendly, keep it sexy. And they're not doing that. There's no man being a man and woman being a woman, is there? It's okay to let nature take its course and like, I want to be nice to this person. They look really attractive. They're being really sweet to me. This goes male to female and female to male. It makes things a lot more amicable, does it not? And if most of these men are addicted to porn, which 96, 98% of men, married or unmarried, have looked at porn within the last 6 months, and their wives are shrill and commandeering their duty and not asking them, what's your favorite outfit of mine that I can wear? And neither party's working out and they're kind of letting themselves go. The attraction will slip. And then the natural amicability is gone. And now it's just battle of the sexes. Do you think that's accurate, or am I overstating the case?
That's 100% true. People start to lose focus of, you know, what they were originally attracted to their spouse in the first place for, and start to complain, and they slip into that weird area now where it's like they're roommates that just argue with one another once in a while, and perhaps they knock boots on a weekend or something. I don't even know how that works. It's really strange, but or the marital act or whatever it is. But yeah, I mean, and look, it's natural to try to figure out how to do things. So like you were saying, you can't just like let yourself go. I've seen that happen a lot of times. It's not exactly that, that sucks, but like if you got to find time for the gym or staying to look good, then you got to do that. And whether you've got kids now, so you got to find different times or whatever, you got to look good for your spouse. You got to be healthy for your spouse. There's nothing attractive about being a slob, laying around the house, letting yourself go, eating bad, not working out. All those things are very bad. And like you said, the amicability is just gone. They're not even friends anymore. And it becomes just complaint after complaint, and it starts to dissolve. And the natural thing, like you're saying, is that when you're attracted to that person and you have, you know, feelings for them, and obviously positive feelings for them, I should say, then yeah, that's going to be just a, the marital act is going to occur much more often, and it's going to be better. Pornography porn, as I like to say, because when my kids are around, I don't even want to know what the word is. Just it's going to ruin everything, and it's for like super losers, and you've got to kick the habit. If somebody has something like that going on, you've got to get rid of it. There's no excuses, or, you know, it's got to start from that. So if that's the first problem, you got to get rid of that. Everything else can work from there. But if you're doing that kind of stuff, there's just no shot. You've got not as the kids on Twitter say right now, you're not going to make it if you're into prawn. So get rid of that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Anytime you've said prawn, I thought you were talking like P-R-A-W.
No, listen, hey, ever since the Pope started teaching the kids words like coprophagia and stuff like that, yeah. I've realized like I've really got to disguise my speech now, because my kids are starting to get to the point where they'll hear something and they'll ask me about it later. And if they hear prawn, literally my wife has just been like, oh, you know, like when we go and have shrimp, you know, well, there's prawns also. And so we were just talking about like dinner or whatever it was.
Well, luckily, no one listens to the Pope. He's a hater. Yeah. Embittered old man, right? Now, I'm sorry to say, my friend, that back in whenever this was, that he taught me and all of the world what coprophilia is. He so taught gross. The whole world what that is. No one, only weirdos know what that is, including him. He taught us all that in 2015 or 2016. I still knew not to listen to him when it came to theology. But I still tuned in a little bit because he hadn't said over 100 off-putting things yet. The number was hovering around 80 back then. Coprophilia was.
I mean, every interview, every comment, like this guy is just, I'm sorry, we have to do a quick aside. Like, yeah, he said like 80 things or 150 now. Like, I can't keep track. I literally recommend it to you. We could just do like a show sometime on like all of the things. I mean, he's got a statue of Luther behind him all the time now. I got to stop. I'm just going to keep going forever. It's embarrassing.
Is the Luther thing real?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
You see, I tuned out. I mean, I totally believe it. That's who he is. That's what he's trying to do. But I thought that was like some sort of meme I was being over literal about that I'd seen on the internet. He's a weird guy. I mean, it's weird how normal it's become that he's weird. But the Pope did, as a matter of simple historical fact, teach in his soft teaching capacity me what coprophilia is, making love to excrement. And this is what he said about the people, anyone who's ever spoken negatively of him in the press, particularly journalists. He said these journos were coprophiliacs, that they make love to excrement. What an odd.
So gross.
It's so gross. And who knew what that was? I mean, I want to know. How you know that.
Listen, there's some stuff that I just rather not know. And one of the things that I probably don't want to know is why he knows what that is in the first place.
Yeah, that's a good tweet, though. That is a good tweet. Why? I think I might do that right after we get off here. Why does Pope Francis, how did Pope Francis know and learn what coprophilia was? We're talking about the other patriarch, the one over. No, seriously here. We have control over the household patriarchy. Christianity is a bifurcated patriarchy, boss, right? There's a clerical one, kind of the upper part of the subjunctive dip, the subjunctive fork in the road. We're talking about the lower one, the household lay patriarchy. You can either go be a priest or a bishop, you know, a clerical patriarchy, an ordained priesthood, or a non-ordained household patriarchy. JP2 called it the ecclesiola of the home, the church in miniature. And the church in miniature has priest, prophet, kings. And it is husband to wife, like Lord, like Christ over the church. You know, even St. Paul says in the Bible, Sarah called her husband Lord, Abraham. And it's beautiful. And the point is, in this most messed up time of the church, I don't know how anyone combats the notion that Pope Francis is the, by far, easily, the worst, most wicked prelate we've ever had in the church. I think he's Pope. I was saying this to Mark Brumley of Ignatius Press on Twitter yesterday. I definitely think he's Pope, but I just think, you know, which he's like, well, of course. Okay, I'm not a Benny Plenist. But okay, now we're agreeing there, but now admit he's clearly the worst. And then they always get shy, the Pope splainers, you know, they get super shy and they duck from that. It's like, oh, I thought you're wanting to stick the Benny Plenist to common sense propositions. It's like, okay, yeah, well, now we do have to admit he's probably real Pope, but he's really, really bad. He taught us all about coprophilia. And the clerical patriarchy just couldn't be more messed up. And we have to ask permission for everything. We have to, they're in charge of whether or not we get to go to the Latin Mass. They're in charge of whether or not, you know, good new bishops will be elected. They're in charge of even who the new Pope will be. And that's really, really, really unsettling, disquieting. But most of our life, parish orphans and retrogrades, 99% of your life quality actually stems from the household patriarchy, over which you don't need their word by a damn sight. You don't have to ask anything. If you decide you want to diminish your embitterment, married guys at home, then just say today, first off, read this book, and then just say, I'm going to take charge of my household. I'm going to be happier. My wife's going to be happier. My kids are going to be happier. And it's the path on which we'll all get to heaven. Having a household patriarchy is the way it's meant to be. The way Satan rigged this all up to get everyone to hell is having a household matriarchy. If mothers try to be the priests of the household, even if they're trying, no one listens to them. If the mom's dragging him into church and the dad doesn't go, if the mother chastises you, you're not going to listen. This is the father's job. He's got to be at the helm of the ship. And the most important, alluring aspect of this in such a bizarre time of failure of both the patriarchies, which comprise Christianity, is that we have power over this one, and it's more directly related to our happiness, isn't it?
It's 100% related to your happiness, and it's a must-do right now because it will fix things a lot faster than almost anything else right now in society. It's just taking the reins back. I think it was Gavin McGinnis. It kind of reminds me of like the election when Trump won. He said, basically the dudes finally got off the couch and they were like, all right, that's it. I'm taking it back. It's my turn. I've just been passing this off too long and I got to get rid of it. You know, we can't allow this to happen anymore and it has to be done. And so you're right. It'll help with happiness. It'll help with the marriage itself, your whole family. You will slowly start to see everything turn around, and however you want to figure it out, you know, that could be a little bit difficult. You may just want to sit down and be like, hey, look, I haven't been the man that I'm supposed to be around here. And those faults are mine. And I have to accept those and own up to those. But this is what we're doing moving forward. This is the way that the ship is going to drive, right? We're going to correct and do this. And, you know, if you have to explain things, to do it that way. Figure out a way to explain it if you need to. Figure out a way to take the reins and take control and understand that, yeah, it's going to take some learning curve, right? It's going to take some time. Not everybody's going to roll into it as easy as they should, but you'll probably notice that it just feels right. Okay. It comes easier than you would think because it's natural and normal, but you have to start somewhere. So literally, if you just have to just sit everybody down at the family and be like, hey, I'm not the man that I was supposed to be. I haven't been leading. I haven't been showing by example. I haven't been loving or whatever it is. Okay. And I've been letting things go and people make decisions that shouldn't be in charge. Then do that, whatever you have to do. Like you said, reading your books obviously can help too, but it's imperative that we do this or else we are never going to ever have an impact in society at large, because that's where the leadership then, of course, naturally goes from there, right? The family, to society. Okay. That's kind of what we've talked about as well, is that if we're not doing that, we're seeing the direct ramifications of it right now.
Yeah. This, so a lot of guys ask me, what's the first step to take? And I'm really glad, boss, that you addressed it this way. You're a take charge guy, an articulate guy. And I know that this is what you would do if you were in the unfortunate situation of having been derelict as a patriarch. This is what I would do, right? It always works. This is prudential advice, which I don't often give. I kind of famously, with all the purity spirals on Catholic Twitter and Catholic YouTube, I'm always like, I'm not going to get into prudence. But here's one, because I wrote the book on it. And it's almost not prudential. It's almost categorical. The best way to start is to go, you know, sit your wife down at the table, get a cup of tea, make it like, hey, we need to talk, which those four words, according to sitcoms, always means something really devastating is going to come. We need to talk. No, this is not devastating. It's earth shattering, but it's good. Prefatory, I don't know, not saber rattling, but prefatory kind of setting of the stage, laying of the foundation works. Hey, you know why? And it also is something that correctly allocates to a weighty topic. It's due. You build a little bit of a stage for it. Hey, you know, my spouse, my beloved wife, let's get the kids in bed a little early tonight. There's an important talk we need to discuss. It's been on my mind for months. And we're going to get a cup of tea and we're going to talk about it. It's going to be really good, but it is going to change things around here. That, for one thing, just dignifies the conversation. That goes a long way. That's like half the battle in setting the stage. You've piqued your wife's interest. You have laid the foundation that it's okay. This isn't going to be over. You're not going to catch her off guard. She's going to be guessing all day, right? You've given her, you've afforded to her the dignity of, hey, it's a pre-appointed time. It's kind of like a date. She's going to be curious. You didn't leave her in cruel suspense, though. You're not leaving her for, you know, some 19-year-old or something. You're like,
oh, geez.
Or whatever. I mean, you're not doing a Michael Scott where you're at the expense of her feelings, building suspense. You're like, look, it's going to be good, but it's a decision I've made. It's mine to make, and I made it. And it's going to be really great. Make yourself a cup of tea. Meet me at the dining room table in a few hours. You know, it's going to be a really great thing for our family. And I would always start with a one-on-one talk and just be like, look, what you said is perfect. I've been way derelict, whatever. And it's not only my path to heaven that I'm jeopardizing, it's yours and the kids. The way that kids get to heaven is by having a holy family, like Jesus, Mary, Joseph, be with us on the way. That means a patriarchy. It's Christianity dash required. And I'm the leader. Heavy's the head that wears the crown. So this is on me. But now, because of my dereliction, my omission, nature despising a vacuum as it does, you have sinned through commission, wife. You've kind of picked up the slack, and you're probably in some sinful, vicious ways enjoying the extra power. This is the nature of feminism. I will take this on my shoulder. I'm going to change it. That will rid us of the vacuum, the power vacuum. So you're going to see the change around here. It's going to be the best for everyone. You're going to see me, if I ever badmouthed you to my friends, because that is the most common thing when a man is feeling disempowered, I will stop and I apologize. And I'm going to go to confession for those times I badmouthed you, because this is really common. If this is not me, this is the other guy talking now. If I've ever, because I felt so disempowered, there's a high correlation here. Men who are not the leaders, who are not in charge, are less attracted. They're feeling unattractive. These are the types that get involved in the pornography, the matriarchy, feminist, adult households. I will go to whatever confession, and I will never do this again. I will never do this again. Me and you need to get more serious about our romance. Me being a man, you being a woman, that just creates attraction. It's going
to
be
fun. If someone's tuning in right now, they're thinking we're having this talk to each other. Like you're...
we're not. neither boss nor I have this struggle, but we're giving advice to men who do. And frankly, I talk to tons of guys behind the scenes. It is mostly.
Yeah.
And the statistics say most men are looking at porn. If you're looking at porn, you're not a patriarch. If you're looking at porn, then it's because you've been cucked around the household.
And I'm not super gay. An
excuse for it. It's so gay and fake.
Yeah.
And
it's the best way to not be a man is to avail yourself to using it or having it or, you know, anything. And if you've got, I just want to real quick, like if you've got to do whatever you got to do, do it. You just like, if you need something on your phone that locks it down so you can't use it, or your computer, or if you need to have a light phone, right, where it's all it does is like text and call, you can't even use internet, whatever you have to do. This isn't like, obviously, like our wheelhouse. This is like, who's the guy who's got the market on it? Is it Fred? I think Fred's like big into this, but
yeah.
Whatever you have to do, do it, because you have to start there. It's just, it's the most vile, awful thing you can do as a man. Sorry.
It's not really my wheelhouse, but I have been doing, since I've been thinking in these terms, and I've looked at some of the statistics, like 98 or 99% of all men in the last 6 months, that's just a betrayal of your spouse. Now, they don't feel bad about it because the spouses have undergone that phenomenon we talked about, where they're basically not friends anymore. They're definitely not exciting, sexy, flirtatious friends with benefits anymore, which is what you thought marriage was going to be when you got into it. You just started doing marriage wrong. And so it fell away. If you do marriage right, then you will be flirtatious. This will be your best friend. You will be attracted to each other. But the common misperception of marriage that was really created in the media, and it became a real thing in real life because people listen to the media, is that marriage is not attractive. It's not sexy. It's not a patriarchy with a best helper, the wife. It's none of these things. And it was very effectively destroyed. And this created a porn culture even within marriage. And it's, it is important that we tell men, look, when you're taking the reins of power back, say it benevolently. I will stop all of the vices on my end now, cold turkey. And I do tell men, stop whatever you're doing cold turkey that's bad. Don't badmouth your wife. Don't look at porn. Don't look at other women. Just get into your wife. Your wife should be into you. That's the fun part. And mm-hmm. if you both let yourself go, as lots of people did, then go get a gym membership together. Make it part of that conversation. Look, we're going to go. This is what we're going to do. It's my decision to make. I'm making it. Our lives are going to be 50 times happier. We're both going to work out. We're going to go together. I'll get a babysitter or whatever. We're going to do it this many times a week. I will be the best lordly man for you, and you will be an obedient wife for me, and we are going to get our kids and ourselves to heaven, and we're going to have a nice time while we do it. So many men have given that talk that I've kind of given them the bullet points. So like, that went so well. I was so afraid to have that talk, and it went so well.
Well, but think about it. It makes sense. If you sit down with somebody and you show them that you're accountable and you're honest and all these things, that's a very attractive quality, I would imagine, for a woman to have to see in a man, right? Accountability, right? They're not shirking their duties. They're saying, look, I'm not going to just sit here and make it all about you. You did this, you did that, you did that. You know, we have our part in that as well. It's a very important thing for men to be able to say, hey, I've fallen short. You know, I think it's a kind of a funny scene, but like because it's a father-son thing, but I think it's in Gladiator, right? Marcus Aurelius calls his son in Commodus, and he's like, your failings as a son are my failings as a father. It's the same idea. Like the right. failings in the family, the failings as a wife or whatever can also kind of be a failings of the man to be the proper husband and father, right? It's 100% true. And that's gotta be an attractive quality for women. To see that in a man, I don't know how it couldn't be, that they're going to be completely honest and open about it and say, look, I've been doing X, Y, or Z. I'm going to completely stop that right now. And we're going to work forward from here. And if you got to wipe the slate clean, whatever it is, just one of those things where you got to say, okay, we can't keep going to the past now, right? You can't look backwards and be like, well, or whatever it was. You got to be willing to, and I don't know what it's going to take for people, right? Because this isn't necessarily going to be the same conversation, right? And like you're saying, it's a lot easier than people probably would think, but yeah. It's going to take work on your part, of course. So maybe you have to wipe the slate clean. Maybe there's been a lot of hurt or a lot of damage in the past from things you've done or said or infidelities, or I have no clue. Hopefully there's none of that, but let's be honest. A lot of stuff happens. So who knows, right? Every situation is different, but just start from that premise. Take ownership as a man, show that to your wife and say, look, this is the way that things are supposed to be. And it's okay for you to say you've made mistakes and done things wrong. You'd be a clown if you sit down and say, this is how it's going to be. This was your fault, whatever it is, right? That's the most ridiculous thing you can see. So if you start from the right premise, if you start the conversation the right way, everything should help naturally flow from that. And I would imagine it's very, I almost wish like we had Sweet D and Stefan on this, because they could probably speak for that. I would imagine it is. Or when you're saying things like, look, we're going to do things together. Like if it's a weight thing or if it's whatever, look, we're going to get a membership together. I'm going to lead you. Okay. I'm not buying you a gym membership and being like, I'll watch the kids go work it off. You know what I mean? It's like, right, whatever you have to do, lead by example, lead from the front. Don't be pushing people from behind. You've got to do that as a man. That's what patriarchy is all about, being a good example and a good leader. And just, if you started off the right way, hopefully everything should naturally flow from that. And then of course, I don't know, I'm kind of taking over here, I apologize, but it's like, don't give in to frustration, okay? Because it's not going to just happen overnight. You're not going to be perfect at it. She's probably going to have to learn to relinquish things that she's been doing if she's been taken over like she shouldn't have been. You're going to have to learn that power dynamic again, right? The king has to take his crown back and he's got to figure out what to do. So you said not actually saber rattling. Maybe you should bring a saber in and actually rattle it around. Listen up, woman, I'm taking it back, you know, but whatever you have to do though. But accountability is huge, man. And it's a very manly quality. It's a very patriarchal quality to have accountability and to own up to your faults very publicly. Because if you're making those faults publicly, then you ought to be manning up to those publicly as well, right? It's huge.
Yeah, that when you're in management, everything's your fault. So that doesn't mean that the original sin wasn't Eve's. All of the patristic fathers, I was very surprised to find this in chapter 2 of this book. All the patristic fathers say the original sin was Eve's. But
it was Adam your book. Why were you surprised to find it?
I was surprised to find it when I was researching. But I didn't write that. No, I mean, like, it shocked me how based and red-pilled Jerome, Ambrose, Augustine, St. John Chrysostom all are on this topic in particular. But feminism, original sin, it always involves two parts, a commissive part by the female and an omissive part by the male. I really do like how you're like, it's fine chronologically for the man to say, I'm not saying I'm responsible for everything that's happened in the family, but my dereliction was the condition for the possibility of everything going wrong. And then you, wifey, you know, making errors to fill in the vacuum, the void after that. So I will lead by example. And like you say, the three marks of the patriarch that we've discussed here today, if I'm summarizing, are one, male accountability for sins of commission, literally guys that have badmouthed their wives, which tend to be the non-patriarchs, have looked at porn or looked around too much, wandering eyes, or even, dare I say, actual other, you know, infidelities with another woman in real life. So you got to start out with that accountability for sins of commission. But secondly, sins of omission, which is really where you're probably start out the conversation addressing, look, I've failed to be a leader to you and the kids. That's going to change. And really you start saying, I'm going to rectify the sins of commission by addressing my sin, the sins of omission by rectifying my sins of commission. And I'm going to bring them up with you and I'm going to promise you cold turkey, I'm going to be better, but I need you to be better too. We've both been falling short. So rectifying and with accountability, addressing sins of commission, omission as a leader. And then number three, the main mark of the affectionate part of the love, helping the helper. Look, I'm going to help you in some ways, you know, I need you to, you know, you're going to take a back seat. You're not going to feel like the man anymore, the power of the man. You might not like that at first because you have bad habits, wifey. But in other ways, I'm going to help the helper more than I've been. In some ways, I'm going to get off my butt. This will be, I'm going to help you even work out. We're going to go work out together. I'm not going to be staying home on the couch and saying, have a nice workout. We're going to go together. We're going to chat. We're going to laugh. We're going to talk. We're going to discuss the kids. We're going to discuss life and the 15-minute drive to the gym and back. Then we're going to know that we have the strength of doing the right things. You know, we're doing something healthy for ourselves and our marriage. And we know when we get back that we're on this brave new path path to heaven. That's what our marriage is a vocation. We're going to be more intentional about viewing every day as a struggle to stay on the path. That talk with those three bullet points, spearheaded by the patriarch, will go well. I give you a personal guarantee. It might look differently, it might sound differently for some guys than others, but I've given this advice a lot and everyone says, wow, that went well. And I'm surprised how well. So I can tell you,
yeah,
this works. It works for me. I know it works for Boss. I see you and your wife and the natural love you have for each other. And it's what makes us happy guys, you know, instead of having these really, really embittered relationships that embody what's supposed to be the vocation, a failed vocation. We're happy guys because
I don't know if you've ever been around people who like you're saying, are just the opposite, where they're not happy, they're not taking charge of their marriage, their wife is running things, and they'll find ways to not be with their family, which to me is the craziest inversion of what should be happening. I think we've talked about this some, right? Like at work, I'll see people that are trying to find things so that they don't have to go home to their wife and their kids. That blows my mind. I go in with the mindset, like, let's get everything possibly done that we can as quickly as we can, so I can try to get back to my wife and my kids. To the point where, like you even said, when we hang out, like, we're around our wife and kids. Me and you, like, we don't just dump the wife and kids off together and then, like, we go do things. We literally all spend time together, and it's always a great time. But I've seen the exact opposite of that. It's craziness. The happiness is not there. They're miserable. All of those things just come with it. They just come naturally with it, with taking charge.
Work meeting situations where it's like, I would notice that at teacher meetings after school, I'd always, my buddy James would always be like, that's funny, man. You're chomping at the bit. You're always the first guy out the door. You're always going home to Steph. What's cooking? You're going to play video games, watch a movie, play with the kids. But you notice it with, if I can be honest, and I'm addressing the males now, other male teachers that I know are married, I know something about their home situation. The domestic situation is basically the cuckolded non-patriarch that most guys are, if we're being honest. And they're like asking extra questions at the end of a teacher meeting that'll prolong the meeting by 15 minutes. Everybody's reminding a teacher at 2:59 in school about no homework has been assigned. Just like, what are you doing? And I would always be saying stuff. I'm like, we don't need these. This meeting was worthless. Teacher meetings are idiotic. Most work meetings are idiotic in the first place. A camel is a horse made by committee, right? Committee thinking is ridiculous and stupid. And so they'd be like, well, maybe we could do one more breakout session about, you know, curriculum building. I'm like, oh my gosh, you must hate your spouse so much. Why don't you? And they would be around planning lessons. I'm like, haven't you taught 20 years? I have lessons planned in 5 minutes, man. And my students love me and they learn a lot. You've been teaching 25 years. Aren't you using the same old thing? They'll be around after school for hours. It's unbelievable. It's all fleeing the scene. It's exactly what you said. I address it in case for patriarchy.
Yeah. It's farcical to see that. And they'll come up with random things to talk about that don't matter. Let's be honest. Like you said, meetings aren't even half the time. They're just pointless anyways. It's like, have a meeting to set all the meetings for the month, you know, type stuff. It's like, come on, let's just call it what it is. We don't need to do any of this stuff. Yeah, exactly. Let's have a synod on how to, just get home to your family and enjoy it. Just yesterday, I'll share this quick anecdote. I was at, we were out running errands most of the day, and I was out at, I think it was Costco. And every time we're at Costco, people talk about having these bad experiences with these people, like, stare at you, where they're like, well, how many kids are you going to have? And all this, you know, for every quote unquote negative interaction I've had, because I always have fun with those. I think we've talked about how we just like to mess with people. So that they're always fun for me, even if they're bad, but I've had good ones too. So yesterday, this older couple came up to me and they were like, how beautiful. Like, look at you guys, just like, you've got your kids. You look so happy and you just look so blessed and healthy and whatever. And I said, look, I said, honestly, I try to enjoy every second of this that I can, because I said, I hear from so many just loser males, right, that are older now, that they just hated their family or their life. And they look back on it and it's terrible and whatever. And, or if they enjoyed it finally, then they were like, I should have enjoyed it more. I should have appreciated it more.
Right. Right.
So it's as simple as just being intentional, like you said, and enjoying those moments and being happy. Make it a point to just be happy with your family, to spend time together. And those two old people looked at me and they're just like, wow. Like, yeah, that's amazing. That's so true. Like, we wish we would kind of would have. And they're like, because the time does pass so fast, right? I mean, you think about that. I mean, I was just thinking about how when you guys moved out to Mississippi, it's been a couple years already. Like, it's just wild. It doesn't even seem like that, you know? The time just goes so fast. Or it was Halloween was, I think. Yeah. I was like, wow, it just seemed like we were trick-or-treating just recently. So that's the other thing. Be happy with your family. Enjoy the time. Be intentional about it. And everything just gets better. It has to. It's not gonna stay bad. You know, this is some stupid experiment they do where they're like, oh, try to, you know, say mean things while you're smiling or whatever, and it's really hard to do. It's kind of stupid and gay, but it's true, right? Like, just try to be a happier person. Start from there too.
Right. Right. Yeah, the proof in the pudding is Catholic Twitter. All of these, it's, you know, a lot of young males are kind of youngish, married males. It's like, dude,
cesspool.
It's a cesspool. These are miserable cretins for the most part. Not 100% of the time. I mean, I'm on there, you're on there, but it's like, dude, you are off work. This is Miller time. You ought to be hanging out with your wife or laughing with your kids or watching a movie or having fun or performing the marital act with your, having sex with your wife. What is going on in your life that you want to be
while on Twitter?
It's vile. Go live your life. And what you said about Costco is really beautiful. One more practical tip, and then we got to get out of here. Sounds stupid, okay? But I think it's really important. You said when I was at Costco, I'm not even trying to be funny here. Small tweaks to a routine thing that might be unpleasant can make a big difference. And not everyone's a Costco member or a Sam's Club member, but my family, if we have to go shopping,
Sam's Club gang, by the way. I love Sam's Club.
It's good. I mean, Costco and Sam's Club are basically the same thing, but Sam's Club and Walmart are not the same thing, right? Like, if you have to do your weekly routine of shopping and you do it with the family, you go into Walmart, you do feel a little bit like you're like the lowest circle of hell, because you kind of are. It becomes much more fun if you can make an outing on a Saturday of going to Costco or Sam's. Little adjustments like that. I know it costs a little money for the membership, but the kids like the samples. They have more exciting products, stuff like that. It sounds stupid and maybe superficial, but it's not. Little adjustments that make particularly a man, more attracted to just embracing the life, owning the life. It's fun. It's more fun to go hang out in Costco or Sam's than Walmart or some boring grocery store. And then once you develop a routine, everyone's looking forward to it. My daughters beg us, if we have to go grocery shop, can we do a Sam's trip, not a Walmart trip? You know, it's just stuff like that. It's learning the tricks of the trade, learning to cope, getting better with stuff. Learning Kobe knew whether to pivot to his outside foot or his inside foot based on whether or not the double team was coming from the high post to the low post. When you get good at something, you learn the little tricks that are efficacious. And these are little tricks, little life hacks. You'll figure them out as you go. But the important thing is the big principled stuff about which we're discussing most of this in not of episode. I hope people have enjoyed it. I think it was a good talk. This is how I was hoping the talk would go. And, I would admonish men out there to probably a majority of my listeners need to go have it. I'm very confident. Get to this conversation today. Pick up Case for Patriarchy. It gives you a lot of the principles, especially in chapters 2 and 3. And then, you know, you're better equipped to do it. But even if you don't buy the book, go have a conversation like this today. And I think even just in this simple hour-long podcast, Boss and I have given you a lot of the tools that you're not going to hear elsewhere. You don't hear it in Catholic trad world. You don't hear it in Catholic normie Novus Ordo world. You don't hear it from the Protestants. You don't hear it even among the secular conservatives. You're not hearing it really anywhere. As simple as it is, that should be surprising. But the devil's a lot more clever than us. His psychology is infinitely greater than ours. So it's not that surprising. It's a simple trick he used. Sister Lucy wrote this to Cardinal Caffara, one of the Dubia cardinals, in 2017, 2 months before he died. Cardinal Carlo Cafara, one of my favorite of the Dubia Cardinals. He, 2 months in March of 2017, he gave this talk. He would die in May of that year. Gave this talk and he said, look, I've never told anyone this, but in 1981, I received an unexpected letter from Sister Lucy of Fatima. And she said that the final assault of Satan on the world would be on the family. And that attack was about to come in 1981. And it's on us today, he said in 2017. A lot of Catholics who don't know the angles to look for thought that Cardinal Cafara meant homosexualism, transgenderism. That's part of it. But that attacks almost no one, right? Less than 1% of the people out there are even tempted by homosexualism or transgenderism. 99% of the households are afflicted by feminism, right? By the stuff we're talking about, the men not being the men, the women not being the women. That's, I believe, what Sister Lucy really meant. And that's, I talk about it in the book. But boss, as always, it's amazing to have you on these in not of talks, because you're a very articulate man. I really like a lot of the things you said today, and I appreciate you rejoining me.
Yeah, I'd like the opportunity to come on here and just offer some advice if I ever can. I mean, I wish we could package a lot of our conversations we have and just to share it with people, because like the whole idea, right? The parish orphans and retrogrades, people are struggling out there. So any way we can help is awesome. So thanks for letting me have the opportunity.
Yeah, cool, man. All right. Well, we'll catch up in real life soon. The rest of you, stay faithful, stay obedient. Remember, this is, if I had to say, this is the most obedient show among traditional Catholics, and it's the most traditional show among obedient Catholics. I don't think I'd be exaggerating. You're not getting this content anywhere else. I'm just doing a little self-plugging here, shamelessly. You know, the most obedient among the traditional, and the most traditional among the obedient. There's too much pope-splaining that goes on. On the other hand, there's too much outright disobedience. There's a narrow line. Narrow is the distinction between twilight and dusk. And that's the ground that we are trying to claim. We're trying to sound out here on Rules for Retrogrades. Anyway, you guys stay faithful, stay tough. We will survive this time. Deus vult. God bless you all.